So when I went to see this, I went to the Grove.
And, oh, yeah.
Which, you know, because it's close, whatever.
Right.
But
it's convenient.
It is. I can walk to it. But, yeah. I swear to God, every trailer before this movie, though, went so hard.
Oh, what trailers were
there? I don't even remember all of them. They were all for horror movies, though.
They only played the one before mine. I went to the Los Feliz 3. They only played the Oppenheimer one.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah. We saw that, too.
Yeah.
But I saw it at, like, one of those AMC theaters. So they give you this big...
Give you a whole thing.
And it was just... everything was a horror movie. And they always started out the same. And it's like, okay, when's it going to turn?
Yeah.
When's it going to turn?
It's like the... Yeah, exactly. You get that one piano key. It's like, ding, ding. I'm having a hard time lately.
Yeah. So it was like that.
Someone on TikTok, like, made a video about that.
Oh, yeah. But, like, it was like that. But it was just... I think it's like they want spectacle in the theater. They want to bring people back. So they're really, like, going hard. And it was... I was joking with Mike. I was like, the trailers were more stressful than the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh my God, like, all my adrenaline is been used up. I was really calm by the time Nope started.
Compared to the movie, compared to Nope, which, like,
well, which is fantastic, as we're gonna get into which, let's, hey Chelsea.
Yeah, hey Victoria.
You know what I mean?
What?
A breath of fresh movie.
Me too.
All right. This is the Breath of Fresh Movie, a weekly podcast where me, Victoria Harley.
And me, Chelsea Pope.
We know it's wrong. We don't care. A little snort in there. Each week we watch a movie neither one of us has ever seen before, and then we talk about it.
Sweet.
Yeah. You want to do the spoiler thing?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's definitely going to be some spoilers in this one. Yeah. Like, this is one of those movies for sure. With Nope, the less you know going in, the better. So ideally, you'd be listening to this after having watched it.
Yeah, I do think kind of, I mean, Lamb was another one of those movies that was, that one we saw right away, though.
Like, right.
I feel like Nope's been out for almost a month now. Not quite a month.
Something like that.
It's been like three weeks, I think.
Yeah.
Came out July 22nd that it had its wide release. So we're not even a month into...
Feels like it's been out longer, but
it does, just... because, well, the marketing really keyed it up.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we knew it was coming for a while.
Yes. They did a great job with that.
Oh my God, so good. Which I rarely, you know, applaud a marketing campaign.
No, but really.
But when a good one happens.
It's pretty cool. And like thinking back on the trailer, like, they give you nothing. Like,
no.
It's very misleading.
The trailer's so good.
It's what it's going to be.
Yeah. And yet, like, very evocative.
Absolutely.
Like, the horse in the glass box and the woman, you know, his co-star with the face.
Yeah.
And it just, yeah, I mean, they really, like...
Make you think there's going to be a lot of stuff going on with
It was an amazingly interesting trailer that gave you really nothing.
Yeah.
And thank God, because that was great. So, I mean, let's just go ahead and say, in case you haven't figured it out, this week's film is the horror science fiction film Nope, directed by Jordan Peele.
Yes. Yay.
And, you know, we know Jordan Peele. We'll talk more about him because I learned some things about his life that I had no idea.
Awesome.
I'm super impressed. I'm even more impressed.
I'm excited. Yeah.
Anyway. Well, we're going to ruin it. But here's the, similar to the trailer, here's a log line that's fairly safe.
Yeah.
Residents of a lonely gulch in inland California bear witness to an uncanny and chilling discovery.
There you go. Thank you. That, I mean, it's as much as you can give before you're really getting
into it.
You're really getting into it, you're spoiling it, you know.
Speaking of getting into it,
we're getting into it.
Like, first impression, like, tell me everything.
Yeah.
I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I knew I was going to like it. Again, going into it with as little knowledge as I had, I was grateful for that because I think if you go in with too many preconceptions or too many little this and that, you know, in your head, you might get disappointed. You know, you might end up like Logan Paul going into his little Twitter tirade about this movie. This is not like if you're someone going in, you want like this, like a very sort of like straightforward type of scary movie or sci-fi scary movie. This is definitely not going to be like that. I can't remember the source of the other tweet I'm thinking of right now, but someone was comparing Nope to more of like the experience of like big themes Mm-hmm. And they said something very like, it was very like Don DeLillo style. Maybe that sounds a little bit like schmaltzy or whatever, but mm-hmm. I think that's nice with this film. I think there are a lot of, there are segments, there are little vignettes here and there that I think tie to an overarching theme or a few of them. Really.
Yeah, there's definitely themes. Like this is a movie that, I don't remember what the rating is now, but it's a movie conceivably an English teacher could use to teach about themes.
Right.
Because it has that. But I also think that this movie, just based on, I mean, I did my research like I like to do, but I went to go see it, you know, it was at night, it was like Monday night, and then I came home and I slept.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and I was like, it was still there, you know, and I was still thinking about it. And I was like, God, that was so good, you know. But then I started to read about stuff, and I came into some Collider article that was attempting to basically like explain, you know, the thing. And I hate that. I hate this like, nope, explained or broken down. It's like, you're not really supposed to do that. Like, you know, the cinema sins bullshit. And like, I just, there are a lot of themes in this, but I think there's space. There's all this space for you to like take what you want from it.
Right.
I mean, there are some messages about media and about race, and you know, there's all kinds of like themes, but it's still just an incredible, like, I mean, it's almost an adventure western story at times.
It does feel more like a triumphant western, especially in that last scene.
Oh, yeah, the last act,
the music, and sort of the looking out in the distance and through the dust. And
I mean, I love a man on a horse. It's not bad. We don't have that as much in movies. It was very romantic, you know. Like, I loved all that. I love the titles. I know it's like a weird thing to fixate on, but very Kubrickian. Like, you can definitely tell that The Shining is a huge influence on Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about the way even certain cuts happened and certain, as you said, vignettes. Like, I mean, we got to talk about Gordy's home.
Right. Oh, that's great. You know, that's another thing I really appreciate about this movie. And again, shout out to the marketing of this as well, is like, there is this very relevant secondary story or background that has to do with this 90s show, Gordy's Home,
a sitcom.
Or 90s sitcom, mm-hmm. very sort of like Full House, step by step vibes.
Exactly what they drew inspiration from.
They have this chimpanzee in the house.
He's one of the characters. He's Gordy.
And he goes ballistic on the set one day. And
he took, a balloon pops, right? And it was just the last straw for this.
Right.
For this.
And so he goes off. But what I really like is that, you know, Jordan Peele, he posted on his Twitter. I keep talking about Twitter because it's relevant with the marketing of this. And he posted like the fake opening credits
for
the sitcom,
Home.
Which is, I thought, really a really fun world building. I can imagine this would be like an extra features on the DVD, you know, and it's just a nice treat that helps sort of even further contextualize the mm-hmm. story.
Oh yeah.
And immerse you into this reality.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, I think the whole storyline with Ricky Park, mm-hmm. Gordy's home, this whole idea of like man thinking is so arrogant that they think they can put a party hat on an animal and make it do what they want. And that's not how nature works. And like, you're only ever in an agreement, you know? And that ends up becoming incredibly important to the larger story of the film. But I mean, that was what I thought about like the most, was like, what was going on in Ricky Park's head? Because, this guy who was a child star is on the set when this chimpanzee mauls everybody, like goes mm-hmm. crazy. And it just, but he has that moment, right, where the monkey's not going to kill him or the chimp. I'm sorry if I'm misprimating here. Yeah. But there's almost this moment where they're about to like touch hands or bump fists, maybe.
Right.
And then that's when whoever has arrived on set to deal with it, like, shoots the creature and it just falls dead in front of the kid.
But it gives him this false notion that he has this special gift with animals, or that he knows how to communicate.
Yes.
And that is the,
it won't
that
hurt
is
him.
The special reason why he wasn't attacked like the rest of his co-stars. And there's that implication too, that he being a minority, the rest of the cast was all white.
Right.
And, there's the implication there that there's some sort of, I guess, understanding, if you will,
I hear what you're saying. There's something there. And then, you know, the other, I mean, speaking of the world building, there's this show that, of course, and I mean, what's so interesting is this whole story is told by him as an adult.
Yeah.
While they're standing in this little museum he has hidden, like, behind his office, And it's like a museum to his own trauma.
It's like this shrine. He worships it.
He
even has on display, there's this shoe that's standing up.
The shoe.
And they talk about that again with another like theme, big term English teacher thing. I'm like, you know, this would be one of those talking points about like, what does the standing shoe mean? What's the idea of a bad miracle?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And, He literally puts that on a pedestal
infusing
this great meaning on it because that's what he was focusing on, as opposed to, you know, making direct eye contact with Gordy.
Right.
And eye contact as well.
Right.
Is also,
it's a big issue here.
A big issue here between Gordy and then also the thing we're avoiding talking about, which is really the main storyline, which is Jean Jacket. The given name to the
extraterrestrial life form
that's right
hiding itself in a cloud over this sort of remote valley,
right?
And in fact, there's issues with like, oh, cell phone drops off here or this, but apparently it's just been for the last 6 months,
right?
You know, and there are these presences and changes, and yeah. So just to get it out, I think like one of the greatest, if there's a twist in this movie that I think is fabulous, it's that you think we're getting a flying saucer. You think you're getting a machine ship.
Right.
It's not a ship. Maybe there is extraterrestrial life, but maybe it's not intelligent. Or maybe it's just hungry.
Maybe it's just a pretty straightforward type of predator. I mean,
exactly. You know.
Yeah, and it's sort of in the same vein. It reminds me of Alien in that way, where it's like there is this creature, but it's solely intent on consumption and survival.
Yeah, it doesn't have. It's part of nature. It's like this movie was. I mean, it's such a redundant thing to say, but it's like about the nature of nature. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the chimp that mauls the people becomes this sort of micro version of what ends up happening, because this creature, right, is appearing in this valley. Meanwhile, we've got Ricky Park has grown up, and his one big success as a child star, apart, you know, this show was obviously not, you know, it's a tragedy, but right. He played the little sheriff. Whose name was Jupiter, and so his nickname is Jupe. And he is now built in this valley near the main characters of the story. He's built this kind of little western town, kind of looks like
a little like Podunky like theme park.
Which they, by the way, that was built from scratch.
Which is, and they have that immersive like experience at Universal, which likewise
I want to go.
Gives very little away, gives nothing away.
Oh yeah, nothing away.
Not even though we've given a bunch away, but
he's set up now this own. You know, he's been running the show for about like 6 months or so, and he's trying to. You know, some of it's also about him trying to climb back into this life and this wanting to be a star again.
Right.
He seems to know about the existence of this extraterrestrial life, but because it has not come for him, he thinks
he's exempt again. Yeah, he has some special gift.
Yeah. And even says, like, he won't harm us. He won't harm me. He hasn't. This is a gentle creature. But they're baiting it with horses right. that they're also buying from the Haywood family. So we haven't talked about the Haywood family.
We haven't talked about the Haywoods, but they're really important.
It's really
their perspective. The story is predominantly told through.
I just found Ricky Park. That whole story was just like. He's
extremely important.
And so interesting. And then, of course, then the creature shows up and it doesn't take the horse. The horse doesn't, you know, it takes the audience and Ricky.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we don't know quite what's going on yet. They're pulled up, you know, you could say abducted, but they're sort of inhaled. And for me, this is the high watermark of the horror of this.
Yes.
Is when we're inside watching them be processed through what appears to be the creature's digestive system.
Right.
The strange, like, squealing sound we heard when the thing would pass over us was actually people screaming inside.
Because they're being digested alive.
And, you know, we follow it up to the point where somebody sees one of the old horses partially digested above them, understanding that horse didn't home. Yeah. That's what's going to happen to us. And it is, that for me was just like, oh.
It's a great scene, and I think what makes it work the most is how little he gives to. He's not giving an in-depth,
impressionistic,
you know, interior anatomy, but it's like you see Jupe looking up, and as the wind is going, then it just cuts to black.
Yeah.
Then it cuts to you see everybody going up, And then it cuts to black again. And then it cuts to this very short, like 10 seconds maybe.
We're inside.
A few people going up through the system. And that's all you get. And then we cut back to... We cut back
to the ground.
The Haywoods.
Yeah.
And,
two people walked out at that point in the theater.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if that was because they thought this is too much or if they just gave up on it. Later in the movie, about four people walked out, but I think they were just like, I don't like it.
You know? I mean, it's not going to be this very...
No.
It's not like...
But that moment you're talking about, and you're right, like way to break down those moments of black, like, because there's so much silence in this movie. There are these like gaps and the way silence is used to indicate its presence, right? Like the electronics go, but the crickets stop and the wind stops. And it's like, oh, wow. Like the sound design in this movie is really fantastic. Like it's worth seeing in a theater. And this is also, I kind of want to see this again. I mean, I definitely want to see it again to get ahead of our ending question. But this is the first horror film that's ever been shot in 65 millimeter for IMAX. First time.
Wild.
So go see this at an IMAX if you can, because it's very much a movie about this guy. And I feel like it would only enhance the big openness of this.
The big buzzword around this movie being about spectacle, but it itself, of course, is a spectacle, and it's a very grandiose, the bigger the screen, ideally, the better.
I mean, it's kind of always true with movies, but man,
this is a good, a lot of directors are like, oh, you gotta see in the theater, but this is definitely one of those ones.
No, we really mean it.
It benefits you, letting it wash over you, so to speak.
Oh, for sure. And it was also filmed on film. Like, I mean, for those people out there who know about digital versus that, it was filmed on like Kodak film. So it has very like, I don't know, he gets to do that, right? Like he can choose to spend a little more and be a little more particular, but I think it fits the themes as well, because a cinematographer ends up being key to this whole thing. So, to get to finally the Haywoods, who deserve our attention.
Of course.
And I love them. What did you think about the Haywoods?
I thought they were great. I mean, I love the brother-sister dynamic. It was very believable, and you can see the resentment there with the father taking the son to start doing background, to start work, because they work with these horses.
They're horse trainers. Yeah. Hollywood horse trainers.
Exactly. And so, the daughter, Kiki Palmer's character, Emerald, she has this, she has this sort of thorn in her side that she was not sort of the chosen of the two kids to work on Otis. The Scorpion King.
Yeah. Well, Otis Jr., Otis Haywood OJ. Being the, OJ is his nickname. Otis Jr., we start kind of like with, for a while, their father is alive, who's played by Keith David, who's got the most velvety voice.
And also, like, just a nice Easter egg for if you're a fan of horror and, his iconic turn in The Thing.
I mean, he's
a big fan of that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, he's been in like over 300. He's got over 300 credits.
Yeah.
Like, the dude is prolific. Keith David's amazing. He plays the father. He has that great, I mean, you just believe everything he says because he has that deep, deep voice.
I almost, it's like I would have liked to have seen more of him, but I understand why
we didn't.
That's not the case.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's an example of casting where it's knowing and having the context of his history as an actor.
It's a nice little wink.
There's like a nice wink there, but there's like there's added significance to his character and his early demise in the film, which is when the first screwy thing that we notice happen.
Right, which is, initially it's blamed on, he dies because, a quarter falls from the sky?
Yeah, it's a,
and
yeah.
And it just...
I believe, like a dime. It's a small coin.
A real small coin falls from the sky, just goes right into his brain and kills him. And it's like through his eye. And, it's blamed on an airplane or something. We come to find out later, though, that no, he was kind of a victim of the... I don't know, excretions of this alien.
Excretions,
I don't know how, I mean, some people are saying he's taking shit. Some people are saying it's a vomit moment.
It's kind of, it's all through the same hole.
It's like a mouth cloaca thing.
He's
it's an alien life form. It's got one in, one out.
I think of it very much, he's purging, as it were.
Sure.
All the non-biodegradable objects.
It's all the crap.
System.
It's like people's keys and their coins and belt buckles. I mean, it's a weird mixture of shit, but it all makes sense later. But And then, so the Haywood family, these Hollywood horse trainers, that the trailer does have this. So if you've seen the trailer, you know, Kiki Palmer delivers this really fantastic monologue, which apparently she did like 14 takes of. Each one was a little bit different, that explains the family history. And you get the sense that Otis Sr., this used to be how he would introduce himself on set. You get the sense that this is a practice speech, a way to introduce themselves. And what we what I love about this is how the horse in motion, that one of the first, you know, kind of motion pictures ever taken was of a black man on a horse. And although people know the name of the photographer, many, the idea is that these people are the descendants of the jockey on the horse.
Yeah.
And you know, it becomes part of their, like, we have been involved in film and cinema since the beginning, you know, and that, again, trying to find your place in an industry and like have your legitimacy. And their father had this great way with people and with horses. But what we find is now that he's passed, OJ may be really great with the horses, but he's not great with people. And we're watching the struggle of just like, my parents built something big and I can't even hold on to it. And then the larger part of like what's happened, like, and this is where Ricky Park comes in, because he's built this thing literally next door. He bought a parcel of the land off of them. He's starting to buy their horses, which apparently is just feeding.
He wants to buy the whole farm and just treat that as a feeding receptacle.
Yeah. So it's, you can see how everything is eroding their legacy, their connection. I felt really sad for that, just the birth. Like, and Daniel Kaluuya, I mean, a great performance of very few words.
Yeah.
And I feel his disappointment in himself without it being spoken. Kiki Palmer, I mean, she's...
so much charisma.
Oh, and I mean, everybody's saying it, but really it's true. I mean, it's just, she's great in this movie. Yeah.
She was very much needed at times, I think, where it did start to feel a little, started to get very heavy or very, you
she
know, you're getting
a lot of
into the, a lot of the stoic nature of OJ.
Sure. Yeah. And one criticism I did read was that, like, these are people who seem to be able to put trauma away really fast. And I'm like, yeah, that's fair. Because I think if I had seen what they saw, my response would not be to try to get a shot of it so that, like, we get the Oprah shot and get famous. My response would be, I have to get the fuck out of here.
Right.
Which is kind of her response too. Yeah. And they do, but it's this kind of, like, they can't quite, there's a decision that we're going to do it. Like, when,
because they have that pressure too. They want to, they want to save this ranch and they want to hold on to their, you know, relevancy and the legacy, as it were.
The
you
old
know?
Way of doing things.
They're talking about, like, the horses getting replaced by CGI. And so this is, they're looking for an opportunity to exploit, which is, you know, they're learning through this experience about
the pitfalls of that. And we root for them. I mean, I'm like, oh, they got to get it. You know, and that's why I say it becomes kind of an adventure Western at that point. Because, and we haven't talked about the Angel Torres, played by Brandon Perea, who is the Fries guy.
He's great. It was also, like, just a great shout out to
Fries,
the late Fries.
I will say, I learned that Fries had closed that Burbank location where they went and filmed this, and, you know, all the others. It was a few weeks before they were filming. Mm-hmm. So they kind of restored the inside to look like a working store
so
they could do their shot. And I did, like, my heart was like, it was such an interesting way to have product placement, but, like, it was kind of a little love letter.
And it ties also to the whole theme of the, like, the fading relevancy.
So true. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's everything. I like the,
I like the
thematic consistencies, which, again, you may or may not like how that won't always translate to it being a perfect type of linear story. There are also certain things, like, I myself will admit I get a little hung up at times about some of the technicalities about the nature of Jean Jacket.
Sure.
In terms of Jean Jacket having the ability to suck people up, but only really doing so if they look Jean Jacket in the eye directly.
Right.
Which,
and that eye is like this, the green.
So even, it's this sort of, it literally, it looks like the projection box. You see that at the beginning of the credits, we're literally looking into the eye.
Right.
So we ourselves are getting, you know, metaphorically, like, sucked up into, into the spectacle.
Totally. No, I mean, the notion of spectacle is like such a key word, because it's like, this movie is spectacle, but it's not only spectacle.
Right.
Like, it has a lot of other grounding elements in it. Peele said, so much of what this world was experiencing, this he's talking about at the time he was writing this, which he was writing it kind of, we were all locked inside.
Right.
He said, so much of what this world was experiencing was this overload of spectacle and a kind of low point of our addiction to spectacle. Mm-hmm. And I think there's definitely something about that. He also said, because he was trapped inside, he really wanted to do something about a big sky. And I think that was a great point. But, you know, that's he's nice. Influenced by King Kong, Jurassic Park. All these elements are kind of in here. Apparently, he was very inspired, though, especially for Jean Jacket, by Neon Genesis Evangelion. Like,
oh, yeah. That makes sense, too. Yeah.
Yeah, which I haven't seen. And now I'm like, oh, shit.
Okay. I only just know from, like, the referencing they make to the final shape that the Jean Jacket takes versus
the flying saucer shape.
Right. Yeah. And that it's sort of echoes, like, what I guess angels look like, or mm-hmm. like a biblically accurate
yeah.
angel.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, you know, you have the Bible verse again, themes.
So many themes, but you're right. And I will say also that the creature design, it was a combination of, you know, obviously Jordan Peele and production design, but they actually brought in a Caltech professor in some kind of, you know, I think flight and physics kind of department to come in and help just like come up with this UFO form. And it is that biblical angel final form thing. It was mm-hmm. part of the inspiration. Also, deep sea creatures, jellyfish, octopuses, squids, electric eels, even the notion of like, how does this thing move without wings? Or right. so electric propulsion. Like that's how electric eels, I guess.
Which makes sense too, and it so ties into the electronics.
Yeah, so I thought that was so cool that they really tried to make it, even though this is a sort of horror, we're getting into a sci-fi extraterrestrial world, they really tried. I mean, it was kind of a big gray jellyfish thing, you know, in the end. And very natural. There was like naturalism. There was a lot of naturalism to this.
And talking too about the, you know, why didn't they just go, oh, hell no, and leave.
Right, right.
I mean, I think it, again, ties into I don't think it's too unrealistic, actually, how many of the people that do react to trying to get that perfect shot or exploit the creature in some way. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's actually makes a lot. There, you would have a lot of people like the TMZ reporter coming through trying to get the shot no matter what, even when he's about to die. He's like, get it on camera. You know, that's this obsession. I think that it's not unrealistic to think that actually would be how people treat this experience.
And, I mean, not that I'm not like a big mover and shaker in this entertainment industry, but, you know, that scene where near the beginning where they're on set, you know, when the people don't listen to OJ, and so he gets fired because the horse kicks somebody. But, you know, that whole space, that whole scene, I was like, God, I'm so embarrassed to be in this industry right now. Like, TMZ guys, same thing. There is this, like, very this desperate, like, hunger for things. And you could definitely feel there were lots of criticisms. I mean, the TMZ guy, we never even see his face.
Right.
He is a faceless, reflective ball of a helmet. Like, and he's got,
it's
like,
been hot.
I know. And he's got, like, five cameras mounted on. You know, I mean, it's just, it should, like, that's a type of media, or that's a kind of experience in media. And then we have, you know, this Fry's character, who's, like, technically very masterful. He helps get them set up. He does the install. Like, they can't do this without him. And he kind of joins the team. And I kind of love the way he's talking about ancient aliens. You know, and there's all these discussions and things that are happening around OJ, I feel like. Anyway, but yeah, there's definitely criticisms of media, and I don't necessarily think it's a one-to-one, but some people were suggesting that, like, right, Jean Jacket and this, like, give me your eyes. It's like, they were trying to say, like, well, it's like streaming giants and stuff. And it's like, I don't think it's quite that simple.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, again, you can put onto it what you want, I guess, is part of the beauty of this film.
Don't pull it apart. There should be some unanswered questions. There should be. Just to go back briefly, I mean, the shoe is one of them. That strange way that it's standing straight up.
Yeah.
I was trying to find out more about this or read what other people thought of it. And, you know, apparently after he saw the film, Ari Aster texted Jordan Peele after he saw it, and he was like, the shoe, my God, the shoe. And I was like, oh, I fucking love that. And they were talking about how, like, the strangeness of it, like a bad miracle.
Right.
You know, it's that bad miracle idea. It's like this insane thing happening that you kind of can't look away from. It's kind of about horror, you know.
Yeah.
And again, because Ricky
is so fixated on that.
And in that little office of his, he's got it presented. And yeah, anyway. I love the cinematographer character they rope in, you know, mm-hmm. who's this old school dude. I mean, the first time, well, not first time, but when we, on that commercial that they got fired from, they had, there's this really raspy voice DP. And M is smart enough to get his name off the call sheet. And is like, we need help, you know, like we need somebody, an expert, you know, in photography to come out here and help us. And he kind of agrees to it. But I knew that guy had a fucking death wish because he was at that old editing station. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
Some film nerd, please write in. And he's watching and rewinding a footage of a tiger and a python in like a deadly battle, struggle right. for life. And it's like, and I don't know, there was something about his like he wanted to the ultimate shot,
and he has like he gives those very cryptic but revealing lines, like, you know, once you know you never get to the top, or he's always chasing that yeah. white whale, so
yeah.
to speak.
Yeah, and I like that appealed to him, what they were trying to, like, they understood yeah. how to get to him. And then just, I got to say, like, about him too, is just when he shows up with that mechanical camera and the way M reacts, like, yeah. didn't I tell you he was going to come out here with a mechanical camera?
And the most
camera?
Iconic, like, hand slap,
so
handshake.
Good. Oh, there was so much joy in that moment. So much joy. This movie's just great. And it's receiving all kinds of great attention from critics. I don't even think we need to quote any this week. Like, usually I give some reviews, but I'm like, no, we're good.
They're out there.
Listen to this review. a lot of this was filmed out in the Agua Dulce Desert in northern Los Angeles County. What was interesting was the locations guy chose two places, and they didn't know this, but one of the locations where they built Jupiter's Claim used to be owned by William Mulholland, one of the most important founders of Los Angeles, brought the water here. And then the other one used to be owned by Howard Hawks. And neither of them knew this, but it was like, just based on like sense, you know, and like, yeah, this looks good. Or yeah, I want this. It's like, they had the same vision as some other people. And they just said it was a sort of spooky moment in the, yeah. in the production of this. Like, oh, wow. You know, there's all this Hollywood history steeped in it. So again, everything is contributing to the meta-ness of it. I mean,
yes.
we didn't mention it, but there's a Mad Magazine cover that's in Jupe's office that is what leads into the little museum behind
right.
the wall. But what's really cool is they actually went to Mad Magazine and they were like, hey, can we do a cover, like sort of satirizing this thing that was supposed to happen in 1998? And Mad Magazine agreed. So they actually found one of the original like cover designers and got him to draw the cover artist made a, like this special cover just for this movie.
Attention to detail.
And
it's so good.
Oh, and there's even like little jokes about like Monica Lewinsky because it was 1998.
Right.
So they did all this. So that what you were saying about world building.
Yeah.
I mean, they really, again, this is like world building can look like so many different things. And what they've done in this movie is incredible. Even the whole like, yeah, that's why you can't film with chimps anymore. You know, it's like there's like a whole logical kind of history to this.
Yeah, and I love all the referencing to SNL as well. It's like those would be the cast members that would perform those bits. The Chris Kattan as Gordy.
Oh,
it's
my
like,
God.
Of course, it's like if you're that got like a nice chuckle in my little hipster
yeah.
Los Feliz theater audience
yeah,
when
yeah.
he was talking about
Chris
oh,
Kattan.
And the
yeah.
iconic Chris Kattan.
I know. That was definitely a generational thing. But, you know, Jordan Peele comes from, like, that sketch world. So it's like,
yeah.
I know he auditioned for SNL. I mean, I wanted to say, like, who hasn't?
Yeah,
but then, like, plenty of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. No, I didn't mean
good.
It like that.
No, you're good.
I haven't. But, yeah, it's, I sort of forgot that Jordan Peele came out of Mad TV. Like, I'm, you know, I didn't know enough about this guy before. Like,
right.
I love Get Out, and I saw Us. And I knew he did Key and Peele, but I didn't look into him more deeply than that. I'm kind of transitioning here into director's chair.
Let's do it.
All right. Get rid of you. I don't need you. Oh, I do want to mention just real quick that
yeah.
Most of the effects in this, apart from the alien, are practical. Like when they were shooting those scenes where they needed like wind and dust to be kicked up, they actually had a helicopter to kind of be like the stand-in.
Actually, yeah.
So they really gave people something to react to, run from. You know, like, I think that's really cool. I just want to throw that out there.
I love it.
So I found out he went to Sarah Lawrence.
Well, there you go.
Which I'm like,
that's
right
interesting.
Away, that's nuts. I applied there.
Oh,
I
yeah.
did not get it. very expensive.
That's okay. You save some money, I think. Very save hard. Some bones.
No, we're fine. But I really wanted to go there. Yeah. So I was like, right away, I'm like, Sarah Lawrence.
Cloud's got the, you know, you get, what's your concentration? You know?
And you have a dawn that you meet. Like, I mean, it's such an old school place. I mean, I toured the campus. I applied. I wanted it so bad. He got to go. Anyway, he was born in New York City in 1979, February 21st, if you want to know specifically. I think that makes him a Pisces, right?
Yeah.
He's married to Chelsea Peretti. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So I'm totally out of the loop on this guy. So if everyone's like, yeah, duh. His father, Hayward Peel Jr., was from North Carolina. He was black. His mother, Lucinda Williams, not that one, was a white woman from Maryland. I read that, like, at seven, Jordan Peele's father left, or that was the last time he saw him. So I presume it was a walkout and not death. But I didn't get more information there. It meant that he was raised in Manhattan by a single mother. He attended, I don't know what these are, but people from Manhattan can tell me. He attended the computer school, which I guess is something special. He also got a scholarship to a private school called the Calhoun School. So I think that's a pretty nice one. Then went on to Sarah Lawrence, where he dropped out of college after 2 years to form a comedy duo with classmate Rebecca Drysdale.
Oh, there you go.
And he did work at Second City. He also did something called Boom Chicago, which is in Amsterdam, which I had never heard of before. Again, I don't know things. But I'm like,
it's a big one. It's a big one.
Okay. See, I don't know.
That's okay.
I'm really ignorant, guys. But I was just like, oh my God, sketch comedy in Amsterdam. Let's go to Amsterdam. He had, like I say, he auditioned for SNL back when they were basically just trying to find someone who could play Obama. So
he certainly got that opportunity and with Key and Peele.
Oh, yes, he did. Yeah. He did. Yeah.
Yeah. My understanding was that he had gotten it, but then his contract with Mad TV, they wouldn't let him out of it. There was like the tiniest overlap.
Wow.
And they like kind of dicked him over.
Shit.
And so
I didn't know he got
held back from that opportunity.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Key and Peele was
pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. He was hired to Mad TV in 2003. He worked for 5 seasons. That's where he and Keegan-Michael Key kind of started collaborating. It was clear that they had chemistry. And that led to the Key and Peele Comedy Central sketch series, which hurts Dave Chappelle's feelings.
Boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo. In 2014, they both played FBI agents. I don't know if you remember this, in the first season of FX's Fargo.
Oh, okay. I haven't watched. I still need to watch.
It's pretty
Fargo.
Good. The first season's worth it. He's the co-creator of The Last OG. He's also produced a ton of stuff, like, I mean, just to name a few, Lovecraft Country, Candyman, Lorena. He's definitely got his fingers in a lot of pies. What else have I got here? Of course, Get Out is, you know, it's the big one. I mean, you know, he did lots of really interesting and funny things, like too many to list, quite honestly. It would just be boring. But in 2017, Get Out, I mean, I was living here in LA. I remember the campaign, the billboards.
Yeah.
You know, like,
there's a lot of hype in the comedy community about it for sure.
Well, because it's like, oh, Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
But man, we all know that became a commercial and critical success. And there's so many accolades thrown at it. I can't even list them all. It is just subversive, and it changed the dialogue about race in our country. Mm-hmm. It gave us new metaphors for it was incredible, right?
Yeah.
Just fucking incredible. And it's worth mentioning that besides Warren Beatty and James L. Brooks, Jordan Peele is the third person to be nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Original Screenplay for their debut film.
It's pretty badass.
That's badass.
And well-earned, too.
Oh, my God.
Such a talked-about movie that whole year.
Oh, it was so good.
It was really hard. Like, for a few weeks, it was hard to get tickets
to go
see it.
It was so hard. It was such a big... Everyone was like, have you seen it yet?
Yeah.
I mean, it was, like, frustrating. He's also... similar to that, you know, third person. He was the first black person to receive those nominations for any one film.
Right.
So just, he's breaking all kinds of barriers here. It's real cool.
Kicking ass.
Yeah. He won Best Original Screenplay from the Writers Guild of America, nominated by BAFTA and DGA for the same thing. This led to his really big deal where Monkey Paw Productions, which is his production company, which I love that name, signed this deal with Universal, this 5-year deal with Universal. And that's where Us came from. It's how this film has been financed. And I just want to take one moment to point out that Universal's chairperson is a woman, Donna Langley, and she's really interesting, like really interesting woman who's very good at working with artists. And the fact that you mentioned earlier that you saw the Oppenheimer trailer right before seeing Get Out, This because
or before
or know, sorry, not yeah, Get Out. I apologize. Before seeing Nope, that's like a part of Christopher Nolan's like deal with Universal. They stole him from Warner Brothers because in the whole pandemic and the streaming thing, they didn't handle
with
him
Tenet,
well.
Yeah,
with Tenet, exactly. He was very disappointed. They stole him away at Universal, and they're basically like, we will give you what you want. If theatrical release is important to you, we're going to make that happen.
Yeah.
So they put this really well-made trailer attached to this other Universal project, right?
Yeah.
It's like, there's this like prestigeness to it. It was separate from all the trash trailers that came before. And I'm just saying from the experience of going to like a big multiplex to see this. I don't know. She's very good at working with artists. She's an interesting one. She's one of the only women running a studio. Just period.
Good for her.
There's just Universal's interesting. Pay attention to Universal because there's a joke apparently over at Universal that we don't have capes. They don't have, you know, they're not doing what Warner Brothers is doing. They're not doing what Marvel's doing or Disney. They don't have that. They don't have that playbook. So they're more interested in things like Get Out and like Nope. So it's not only them. I mean, I know A24 has also funded this, but there's some really interesting, hopeful shit happening over at Universal.
Yeah, I think people are starved for some novelty in that regard, too.
People are getting tired.
I mean, with Everything Everywhere All at Once doing as well as it did versus so many of these other, like, this, now we're on the fourth, we're going to the fifth stage of Marvel, Phase 5 or whatever, and, like, I mean, I've been pretty fatigued of like the saturation of like the Disney and superhero stuff for a minute now. Mm-hmm. But it's really starting to come to a head. And I thankfully feel like we're getting that response is being received, at least from what you're saying, like with Universal, where it's like, well, yeah, no, we want to be a little more
nimble and dynamic.
Yeah. And try to get some new ideas.
Disney
out there.
Could not make Get Out. That's not Disney's wheel. You know what I mean? Can you imagine Disney's Get Out?
Yeah.
That's funny, actually. Everyone's happy at the end.
Yeah. That had been the darkest.
I didn't have as much information about Us because I'll be honest, I didn't enjoy it that much.
That's all right. It had some mixed feedback. It's definitely what like a heavy metaphor type of situation.
Yeah, I saw it in a theater. I wasn't mad to have seen it, but I also think like when your debut is that good, there's no way the second
Get Out
movie.
It was really strong and tight. There was a lot of good humor, and I remember the trailer for Get Out 2 in particular had a really great balance of that. There was like a self-awareness about it that was really strong, and I think it's tough, you know, like you follow something like that up, and it's not to say that Us is not like a very competently made film.
I think it would have been a perfectly interesting film if somehow you could pull it out of the context but you can't, you know, it's like, I think it's a movie that maybe 10 years, 20 years from now, people will probably look with a lot more fondness, you know, because it wasn't held right up against Get Out, you know?
It definitely has its fans, too.
It does. I know people who love that movie, and I respect, like, I'm, you know, just a difference of opinion. But again, I don't think many people would argue that Get Out is better.
It's just a tighter story, and there's a lot of kind of loose ends and things on it. So same with Nope, but I think with Nope, you can kind of, I think you can get past some of that, the stuff that you know, some folks might get hung up about like the logistics of the creature. You don't ever actually definitively know if it's an alien or if it's just some sort of, are there others out there? It's a very isolated thing. I think part of like what really makes it work is the specificity of the characters and the relationships.
100%.
You know, not totally just with Jupe, but also with OJ and Emerald.
Oh, yeah.
I think that helps elevate it from some of the things I think with Us where it gets so muddy with the ideas it's putting out, maybe, you know, or at least that's the criticism I've heard.
In fact, I think the moments of Us that worked the best were the ones that were the most grounded, right?
Yeah.
In people and family and, you know, the like, oh, hell no, kind of like, why are those people on the driveway? Kind of, you know, that kind of shit, you know. Just to wrap this up, because Get Out really was fantastic, and I don't think that there's a list of 12 films here that Jordan Peele put together for the Brooklyn Academy of Music film series called The Art of the Social Thriller. Now, this was kind of in response to like what inspired Get Out, but I think these are all just influences and they're worth mentioning. So here's the list: Rosemary's Baby, Night of the Living Dead, The Shining, Candyman, People Under the Stairs, Scream, Silence of the Lambs, Funny Games, Misery, Rear Window, The Burbs, and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Yeah.
So he also credits Steve Martin and Martin Lawrence as like huge influences.
Love that.
On him. So just a little bit about Jordan Peele. Not everything, but I learned some things.
That's great.
I learned some things.
I learned things too. It was great. Good notes.
Oh my God. There was so much interesting about this. Like, and just what a great movie. I'll be honest. I think toward the end I was like, wow, we're seeing this creature a lot.
Yeah.
You know, like they didn't hide it once they didn't hide it. And
because it wasn't, because again, it's not going to be that typical kind of like scare fest horror film where they're really building up
that full
depiction of the character, like with Alien or The Thing or what have you. And I think it lends to, like you were saying, about it being more of like, it's more of an action adventure, like a sci-fi adventure.
Yeah.
It's got a little, and the Western quality aspect too, because they're taming it like a horse essentially. And Jean Jacket being the name that OJ names it for Emerald. And it's almost as this sort of gift of like, this is your horse.
Kind of
a messed up gift, but if you will, but a very much like your horse to tame. And she, I guess tame is a pretty generous word here. She kills it.
She helps. They all help kill it. And the way that like
teamwork makes the dream
the work. Brightest, happiest colored balloons and those sky dancers and like
you got the balloon that kills the creature, and then you got the balloon that set off Gordy. It's like sort of has that bookend quality to it.
Ooh.
The idea of that. Of those, the two things, whether that's intentional or not, it's cool to see.
I mean, I think this movie is just, the word rich doesn't really sum it up, but it's like all the different layers, the way you can find all these little things, it's just full of stuff for you to think about. And I don't know who said it. I read somewhere that they were like, this movie also is really good about giving you the space in this way that you'll think about it later because there are these unanswered things.
Yeah.
And they likened it to like, it's when, you know, you had a loose tooth and you were tonguing it and it comes out and then you keep tonguing that empty space in your mouth. There's something bothering you there. Like, you know, something missing. And I think it's effective. I mean, again, although the Haywoods are so much part of the story, and again, I love the way they presumed them to be the part of the lineage, you know, of film history, that they were, you know, I mean, that the cinematographer's like, I'm talking to film royalty, I guess. And it's like, he's kind of right.
Yeah.
You know?
At least as they ought to be treated.
That's
you know?
How they should be treated.
This is very like an ode, a movie that's like an ode to the below the wine workers, you know.
So great that you mentioned
green
that.
Green and orange as metaphors as well.
You know,
you got the Scorpion King sweater, and then Emerald's got her green on. I think she wears a few green things in the movie.
I'm sorry, I got to mention something because you said below the line. This film was the first to employ trainees from Universal's California below the line traineeship.
Oh.
So there were six people on this who are seeking careers behind the camera, and they got to work directly.
And they're working on a movie that's all about
that.
What they're doing and appreciation
exactly.
for that.
Exactly. Exactly.
They go unseen.
It's like life imitating art and art imitating life, and it's great.
Yeah.
It's in the best possible
way. I think, whereas with us, there's a lot of these unanswered questions. While there's great metaphors, there's so many unanswered questions about the nature of that whole underground, race and just like some of that just gets it's so hard to look past some of those questions. Whereas with Nope, I can appreciate like they're just like, I feel like there's very straightforward meta answers to a lot of these things
I also
being put out there.
I also read somewhere that Jordan Peele was mentioning like how he what he didn't want to do is what a lot of B movies do, where you have this scientist come out and kind of take off his glasses and like, well, we did this experiment and they explain everything.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's like, no. No explanation.
That would just take
the fear out.
Yeah.
Because the whole the idea that you see this thing and you can't cope with it. It's like, oh my God, what is this thing? And and the horror of like, we don't know what to do. You know, I mean, even again, for me, the horror of finding out it's not a ship. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like that was enough to get me interested. The production design's fantastic. Ruth DeJong, who worked on Us, but she also worked on There Will Be Blood. And she went to great lengths to make sure that whole scene of Gordy's home. She was like, I never worked in television. So she had to like do research about what a sitcom, what it looks like to be filming a sitcom and building all of that. And I don't know. There were just, it's such a rich film. I said that already, but I'm saying it again because it's true.
It's true. You're right.
I don't know if
so
I
you liked it.
I liked it. Yeah. Oh, we haven't talked about it. Best supporting player. Who is your nom?
Best supporting player. Think about it for a hot second. I mean, I think the fries technician was really great. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
I like the cinematographer.
Oh yeah, he was fantastic as well. I mean, a lot of these, even like supporting players, they feel like they're major. It feels like
I ought to consider them
like major ensemble. Kids because there aren't that many.
True.
Your attention's not spread too thin looking after all these secondary roles.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, because Steven Yeun, who plays Ricky Park, Joop, I'm wondering, like, to me, he feels like a central character.
Right. I would consider him a main character.
Yeah. But if for some reason you didn't want to, that for me would be the obvious supporting. Yeah. But I think he has such a large role. That's not.
I'll say shout out to the very minor part for Barbie at the Fry's store. I think there's some good use of fake outs for jump scares in this movie.
Yeah, when the lights went out.
Yeah, they do that a few times in this. He teases you. I think he's kind of Jordan Peele's.
He's good
calling you out in a way.
Well, he's good at cracking jokes too. Yeah, you know. There was one thing. I gotta say though, like. My one other criticism, a part of like, it felt like it dragged, not dragged, but it got a little bit tedious at the end for me. I was kind of like waiting for it to just hurry up and be over, which sounds terrible given everything nice I've said about it. But
no, but you're allowed to have an opinion.
The second thing that I kind of rolled my eyes at was the flying purple people eater quoting the song.
Oh yeah.
One line, yes. The second line, no.
Gotcha.
Like, I was like, Nope.
But, you know,
you lost
like,
me.
It's
you
one
lost
of those
me.
Things where like, it's like, yeah, it's a very sort of on the nose reference they're making. But it's also like, I can see how maybe that was just like a smaller thing. But that guy's voice is just so cool.
Yes,
that Jordan's just like, we're going to put the whole thing
in. It's just a personal thing. That would have been my choice, would have just been because the first line is like the whole thing about like, I won't eat you. You're too tough. And it's like, oh, that's a cool like metaphor for what we're. And then it just went on another line. I'm like, damn it. Like,
yeah.
I didn't need the other line. Anyway, whatever. So those are my two tiny, tiny little whatevers.
I think for me, really, the only major one, mm-hmm. that mild criticism, which again, I can look past it because I can understand the
so
the,
much
the,
working.
Where, as far as like the relevancy of why it's important that, you know, we're seeing that parallel of looking Gordy in the eye versus looking Jean Jacket in the eye and looking the eyes. I get all of that. But I also think that Jean Jacket definitely had it out for OJ and Emerald. And at a certain point, I think, like, was it just incapable? Like, it literally just can't suck you up without it making eye contact. It's just one of those things I'm a little, I get a little hung up on. Because it can obviously still suck up inanimate objects.
Yeah.
So it gets fooled by the big horse statue.
That's
and gets
right.
pissed about
that's
that.
Right.
Gets fooled by the balloon, and that's its demise. So clearly it can suck things up that are not actually literally looking at it. It's just
question.
A perception thing. Mm. But then, you know, it's right over OJ multiple times, and OJ realizes, like, don't look at it. Like, he doesn't look up from his horse,
or he notices,
and then go, nope, which is another good laugh. But also at the same time, I'm thinking, like, I can understand him in the car where the alien is smart enough to be like, well, I'm not sucking that whole dumbass thing up.
Sure.
But then when he's on his horse, and I'm thinking, well, I feel like if the alien really wanted to kick his ass, he could do it.
I mean, I know, because when you see the dust part and you see that he's alive at the end, a part of me did want to just applaud, because I'm just like, oh, good, he's alive.
And I love that, too. Like, I go by the idea, because it's semi-ambiguous, but I go by the idea that he did live.
Yeah.
You know?
But I hear you. I think there is, like, sort of, maybe a little logical question there, and that's okay.
That's my one hang up. Whereas with us, it's like there's so many questions. you can go into a spiral pretty quickly of like, if this is about like a wealth thing, what about like a homeless person on the surface? Is there a doppelganger of that guy, and is that guy doing well
or worse?
Or worse? And then like, I just, you know, if it's been a if it's an abandoned government, I don't know, like, why wouldn't, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so many of those other questions, but then it's like I want to appreciate them, but I get so caught up in the logistics of how the underworld of us works. With Nope, I'm like, I can let go of the eye contact question I have with Jean Jacket, because I get how it's, and then beyond that, I think it's all pretty clean. Yeah,
yeah, I think so too. There's not much that
I don't need to know whether it's actually an alien or, you know, I don't mind that this is just sort of like a very hyper, in spite of the grandiosity of the shots and how open the space is, it has that claustrophobic feeling. It's a very, like, it's a very much a case study type of story.
I really, again, the naturalism of it, I think I was appreciating how even mankind's perception of extraterrestrial life is still human-centric.
Yeah.
Like, we can't actually conceive of it because we are terrestrial, right? Like, all we know, really, I mean, we're learning more about life outside of Earth, but for it to be this strange, like, large living thing felt so much more possible.
Right.
Than a machine piloted by little green men.
I almost think that
men.
It is of this world, you know.
Right, maybe it is an extraterrestrial. Right,
the way that it digests and it's a very sort of like and fleshy object. I'm like, I don't know if that could even go in space, or if that would have to be in an even larger receptacle.
A good point. You're right. Maybe it's not extra at all. Maybe it is just part of
a sky creature.
Oh, I mean, when they were designing, trying to come up with the design, and I said they looked at deep sea fish and the strange things that they unfurl, you know, they were like, you know, if you show this to someone, they wouldn't believe it existed, but it does. And I remember somebody very smart, don't remember who, talking about how nature is alien. Go for like a hike in Ohio in the autumn. You'll come across like a weird giant fungus growing out of like the base of a tree. And it really does, like, this is so weird, but it's on our planet. Like our planet is strange and full of alien and inhospitable places, you know, that we're not meant to thrive in. And I don't know, the thought that this was a creature that was territorial and had its own agendas and wasn't necessarily operating on this high cognitive level.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just good.
Absolutely.
It's all good.
I highly recommend.
Yeah, would see it again.
Yes,
yeah,
same.
I want to go see it on the IMAX.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see it on a big screen.
I mean, it's historic, people. Yeah. First time a horror sci-fi has been shot, which is kind of crazy, actually.
Yeah.
Like, why do we reserve IMAX for... You know,
because it costs money.
That's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's proven that he can, he's a good ROI.
Yeah.
So, you know, Universal's like, yeah, we'll give you a bunch more money.
There you go.
So I'm happy about it. I am very excited to see what happens next.
Yeah. I like that he consistently makes very different choices from one movie to the next. You know,
it's clear that he has a vision. And I know that's a word that gets thrown around a lot. But I mean, he's writing for the screen. He's a writer director. He is an auteur. Yeah. And he's so connected to what's happening right now. And the fact that he came from like a comedy background is just icing on the cake.
Yeah.
So
he knows how to get in, get out.
Get out. We'll get out of this episode now.
There you go.
You can follow us on social media at Fresh Movie Pod. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. You can also email us at abreathoffreshmovie@gmail.com. Where can they follow you?
You can follow me at Chelsea the Pope on Twitter and Instagram, and at Chelsea_Pope on TikTok.
Yeah, and you can find me at Criterion OOC on Twitter.
Rock and roll.
Bye.